News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
807 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. And it is Dalton Arwig right here. Sean Sullivan in for Dan Brennan.
Howdy.
And reminder, Monday, with it being Memorial Day, I encourage you to check out our programming, very special programming that day, the Fisher House, which is, as Sean has described it, kind of like the Ronald McDonald House of Charities for veterans, as they help build homes for our veterans and make sure they take care of them. It's one of these charities where we've talked about some of these websites and nonprofits that rank charities just to make sure that your money is going into the right place, because of course there have been over the years some bad charities who aren't necessarily doing what they say they do, and this Fisher House, it's gotten 5-star ratings. So
yeah, absolutely,
they spend the money wisely and correctly. And I said it yesterday, but for a charity like Fisher House to make radio programming, it is captivating. The stories that they've put together, it's not all, you know, happy. It's some great. I found myself listening to the entire show whenever they put new ones out. So check that out. That'll begin on 6 o'clock Monday morning, and we'll run that through 2 p.m. That'll be on Monday for Memorial Day, of course.
Absolutely. While we're at it, and you know, whatever the we say now, full disclosure, I guess we can disclose that now. I'm a board member of this charity, U.S. Vet Road Team Fight or Die. And reminder too, as we think about you know, those that have been lost in defense of our nation, and those you know, those veterans that are now dead, let's keep more alive, and you know, do something to stem what they say is 22, but the numbers are really higher, of veteran suicides per day in our nation. That's what we work on with Fight or Die. Of course, a lot of people know about Fight or Die because of the Atlantic Rowing Competition, where they row across each year starting in December and 50 to 60 days later, come into Antigua. That's the thing that gets most attention for us, but day in and day out, mental health first aid courses and working with our veterans to try to keep them from taking their own lives, that continuing battle they have when they come home from fighting for our country. So remember, usvetro.org or Fight or Die, O-A-R, on social media. Check us out, and you know, you feel motivated this weekend, great time to make a donation.
Yeah, well said. We'll get to the text line here in a minute, the Ascension Technologies text line at 251-343-0106. I know some texts on child labor from earlier we'll get to, but yeah. Some state legislatures are trying to make it so that younger teenagers can work what they're calling more hazardous jobs. I don't know if we would call these hazardous jobs. We'll get into that. But it was a late night or an early morning, whatever you want to call it, for the Alabama legislature as they gaveled out. I guess there's so many different rules that go into this. They weren't allowed to just work straight through over midnight. They gaveled out sometime around 11:59 p.m. and then gaveled back in at 12:01 a.m. this morning. And that's after they put together this House Senate Conference Committee. The way I understand this, and according to, let's see, Caleb Taylor at 1819news.com, three members from each chamber come together and put they become this House Senate Conference Committee. I imagine that makes things a little easier for them to work through whatever differences there may be in the House and the Senate when it comes to these budgets. And they ended up passing both the General Fund and the Education Trust Fund budgets last night, including the ETF supplemental budget and the General Fund supplemental budget. Of course, there was a lot more money to work with in the ETF. When all was said and done, the 2024 fiscal year ETF budget came in at $8.8 billion plus $2.8 billion supplemental bill. And then for the general fund, the appropriations, the supplemental budget there, $207.6 million, while the total general fund budget was $3.1 billion. And as far as those appropriations go, for the Senate and that general fund budget, they ended up keeping $5 million for the Montgomery Whitewater Park project in. Also, the bailout for World Games 2022 in Birmingham, that went back up to $5 million. Remember, they had halved that basically to $2.5 million when we were reporting on the changes, the amendments that had been made yesterday. Well, they boosted that back up to $5 million. Also, they reintroduced money that will go to the Mobile Airport Authority. $5 million is what they settled on in order to relocate the commercial airline ops to the downtown airport. Now, that was initially at $31 million. So that got cut drastically from $31 million down to $5 million. And also cut, but not as greatly, the Port of Alabama received $20 million for, quote, economic development and coal loading and unloading equipment. That initial proposal for the port was at $25 million. So they cut $5 million off of that. For the airport, they cut $26 million off of that. And that's where we stood with the general fund appropriations. It passed 28-3. The three no votes included are one of our local state senators, Chris Elliott, also State Senator Clyde Chambliss out of Prattville, and State Senator April Weaver. The House, then their education trust fund budget, probably the biggest bit of news there that most taxpayers were waiting to hear is the tax rebate money. And yesterday we were reporting that they had changed it to, $210 for a single filer and $420 for couples. They reduced that again. I think this had four changes made over the course of from the proposal coming out from Ivy all the way down to what they settled on. And they settled at $150 rebates for single filers, $300 for couples. And this passed unanimously, but it wasn't an intentional unanimous vote, I guess. One House rep, Tracy Estes, said he meant to vote no, but accidentally voted yes when it came time for a final vote. And that no vote from Estes was going to be because of the $100 million appropriated for prisons. You've talked about this on Midday, Jeff. We talked about it on the morning show. How do you get $100 million and tie that into education for prisons? We know that the state wanted a lot of money, and it ended up they need a lot more money than they thought they needed for these two new prisons. But they grab $100 million from the education fund because they say it'll go towards educational facilities for inmates, and those facilities will be in the two new prisons. So that's how you end up getting $100 million out of the education trust fund that will go towards helping to build the new prisons for the state.
I love the mental gymnastics that it takes to get, you know, you go, okay, we want to allocate the money here, but this is, you know, where it's coming from, so we're going to create this, it's about education. See, we're going to build a big prison, then we're going to have some books in the prison, and it'll be like education.
Well, and the whole prison thing has only been gymnastics, right? I mean, from the, whether we were going to spend COVID money on it, they had to figure out how to, you know, make it look like, and that's also with this other story. We can get more in depth in this too, but Tricia Powell Crane, who you've had on Midday Mobile, the education reporter for AL.com, says that less than half of the COVID relief money for Alabama schools has been spent. Less than half. Remind you, the federal government ended the COVID emergency, I think against their will, but they ended it a month ago or early this month.
Yeah.
So, and that came way, way after most people had agreed the COVID emergency was basically over. And they still haven't spent half of the $3.3 billion that was sent to Alabama schools for COVID relief.
And that's not just true here. It's true across the country. And in this debt ceiling debate, one of the places I think I heard McCarthy talking about, or somebody was reacting to it, said maybe one of the places you could reduce spending is pull back the money that is yet to be allocated, you know, that is out there. There's a bunch federally, not just it's in state hands now, but like in the, you know, in the bank there, so to speak, to be used for COVID. Pull that back. Pull that back. Use that as part of, you know, this debt. Instead of just letting it sit there, pull it back. And add that to the mix of reducing spending going forward.
It's so strange because, you know, whether you believe we're actually up against some financial calamity with this debt ceiling and June 1st, Yellen basically saying that the sky is going to fall if they don't get something passed. But this
she also said inflation was transitory, didn't she?
Okay. Yeah, she has said a lot of things over the years. We're basically sitting here as a country in debt way past our noses.
$31.2 or $31.1 trillion.
But we're sitting there with brand new vehicles in the driveway that haven't even been driven. Like there are things you could do that would really help not just ease, you know, our debt but also ease inflation. There's so much money out there floating around right now that COVID was used as an emergency or as the basis for spending all of this money, all of this basically welfare that went out to the states from the federal government. And if any of these other states are like Alabama, over half of that money still hasn't been spent on stuff that was supposed to be used in the name of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely unbelievable.
You know, if here's the problem. It's never going to happen with our system of government, with the two parties trying to get their thing out of it. But it's almost like if for some limited time the federal government could go into receivership and you had somebody there that's nonpartisan that would come in and say, all y'all's programs, making no judgment about this being good or being bad, but everything's reduced by 2%, 2% spending. And see what that does, because you get in the partisan fights when you go, well, we're gonna cut spending here, and conservatives will say, well, these things are not worth spending taxpayer money on. We need to cut those things. You have that, and then you have liberals there go, oh, wait, no, we got to keep those, and so therefore we'll say okay to more spending from conservatives on military. Although there's a bunch of Democrats that spend a bunch on military too, that we can plus this up and everybody will agree. Versus having a receiver come in and say, all y'all sit down, shut up. Here's what we're going to do. Every program, I'm not judging whether it's a good program or bad program, we're going to reduce by 2%. All right, good night.
Yeah. It's like the nation needs like a Clark Howard or a Dave Ramsey to come in. Like you see Dave Ramsey in some of these clips that go viral where someone calls in, hey, I'm 22 and I'm $2 million in debt.
Right.
I'm wondering how I can maybe work my way out of this. He says, well, what's in your driveway? Oh, I got a brand new car that I'm paying $800 a month on, and I've got this and that. We need a Ramsey or a Clark Howard to get this back in line. Also, I found an interesting tweet last night. I'll read that when we get back. Get your thoughts on that as far as the debt ceiling crisis goes. And we'll also get to your texts on the Ascension Technologies text line, 251-343-0106. Thank you, Kane. 823 FM Talk 1065 in Mobile Mornings. Look me at the Ascension Technologies text line about this debt limit deal or no deal game that's being played in D.C. Jerry from Fort Morgan says, what's really scary is we believe everything Yellen says. This is just another distraction to keep the heat off somebody. And that's similar to a tweet that I read last night, Sean. I guess it came out yesterday afternoon. This Twitter follower, Martyr Maid, who I like following on Twitter. He has a podcast with Jocko Willink. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of him, and does a history podcast too. But here's his tweet. I want to know if you agree with it. He said, the debt ceiling is not a thing. Senior bondholders in the U.S. power structure would never allow their minions in Congress to miss a payment on treasuries. The GOP complains to remind people they're theoretically concerned about spending, then grow the budget even more the next time they're in power. All the quote-unquote debates are fake. That's what Martyr Maid had to say about the debt limit ceiling. And I don't know if all Republicans feel that way, but certainly there's a faction of the Republican Party in Congress who are more than ready to spend when the time comes, when their pet projects are being spent, having money spent on them. They're all good with it. Is there actually a debt ceiling? I mean, to this point, there really hasn't.
The 14th, you have to honor the debts of the Republic, right? But, the interesting thing, too, is if they wanted to just say what they're going to do, why don't you increase the debt ceiling at a level that we'll never reach? Just go ahead and do it. Just go ahead and say it's,
$99.9 trillion.
Just go ahead and bump it up to, a gadzillion.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to do it this way, instead of going through, and I kind of agree with that, Martyr Maid a little bit. I've said for a long time, we have gone past it. We have had situations with government shutdown, but it doesn't last super long. But this is a bit of kabuki theater. They go through, but like I said, I think at the beginning of the week on Midday Mobile, do y'all think they will fail to do this? Do you think we will default? Yeah. And I have the majority of people said no. I mean, so they're going to go through this and then at the last minute get something done, or a couple weeks after the last minute. Your guess was it's going to take them 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think
they'll get it done by the first.
I don't think the last minute is always the last minute. Remember, there was a government shutdown when Trump was in office, mm-hmm. right? And I think, did it even extend down to the national parks where they had kind of shut them down for the weekend or something along those lines? So my guess is...
And by the way, and I don't want people that are federal employees not to get their paycheck, but they always get their money afterwards.
And back pay.
Yeah, it's like not like when they don't get, they end up getting the money. It's just delayed.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's my opinion, that it'll go past June 1st before they get a deal. And they'll, you know, have some big shutdown, blame it on each other, and then everything will, they'll raise it another $2 trillion and then get back to business or get back to non-business after that. But if they were really concerned, would they leave for Memorial Day recess? Because that's what Congress did last night. You still have these negotiators. I don't know if McCarthy is part of that or if he's already, if his representatives are negotiating with Biden's representatives. They're still trying to work it out, and Congress can be called back for a vote on the debt limit. Basically, Congress went into recess last night, and I know some are still in town because you have the one committee who will be hearing from the IRS whistleblower today, I believe. So there are still Congress members who never left D.C. I don't know how many actually did leave, but no closer to a deal, apparently, according to McCarthy as of yesterday. But it is interesting, factions of the left pointing the finger now at Biden and factions on the right pointing the finger at McCarthy and not happy with everything that's going on. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, she's worried that the Democrats are losing the messaging war because Biden isn't blaming the Republicans enough?
In terms of the House and the Senate, Democrats have been very strong. In terms of the White House, I think we could benefit from the president and from folks at the White House, you know, really helping and joining us in amplifying that message.
Another very liberal Congresswoman, Lauren Underwood, out of Illinois. She was not very explicit. It was kind of the political way of her going after Biden here.
If there's going to be Democratic votes for an eventual package, folks want to make sure that our values are represented in that package. And I don't want to convey that there's any sort of doubt in President Biden's leadership, but I think it's really important.
And remember that big battle to elect McCarthy the House Speaker and the Freedom Caucus. You had Gates. You had all these other people who really put up a big fight. And one of the concessions they got was that just one representative voting to I forget the exact term, but basically putting McCarthy's speakership back to a vote. All it would take is one. And it's for things like this. If they feel McCarthy gives up too much to Biden and the Democrats, then his speakership could possibly be back on the line. And now with reports that he might vote and give Biden a couple $1 trillion to the debt ceiling, or more than many Republicans are willing to give up, McCarthy could be in trouble again with the Republicans. Here's Byron Donalds, the Republican out of Florida, when that news came up yesterday.
I think if the Speaker negotiates that with the President, the Speaker will find out there's a lot of Republicans who won't be agreeing with the Speaker.
So it's possible that McCarthy needs Democrat votes in order to raise the debt ceiling with whatever agreement he comes to with Biden. But AOC said that's not going to happen either.
Kevin McCarthy needs to understand that he is not entitled to votes from a party that he does not belong to.
So all kinds of games being played up there in D.C. And according to at least a few, you know, political editorialists, all much ado about nothing because they're going to raise that debt ceiling anyway.
There we go. What's your call? We'll take your text at the Ascension Technologies text line 343-0106, or get a good old-fashioned phone call on this Friday morning 251-343-0106.
FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile mornings on this Friday. Coming to the text line here in a minute, 251-343-0106. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing great. Weather couldn't be any better. And let's start with hours. Memorial Day on Monday, McConnell will be open.
That's right. We're going to be here. It's a regular hour, regular work day. We're going to be here and y'all check everything, the new cars and all the great stuff we got online at McConnellAutomotive.com. We got some great deals with some GM certified cars out there. We got some, finally got some 3/4 ton diesels in, got a couple of regular cab work trucks. A lot of people looking for those, and we got a few of them here. And that new car side, don't forget, we got GM pricing. Yeah, that's employee pricing on all the Buicks going through the end of the month, and that's just us doing it. That's not General Motors. That's just the McConnells doing it. So we're trying to give a little bit back to the community. You want one of these fine-looking Buicks and Enclaves, Encores, or Envisions. We got plenty of them sitting over there. And like I said, we're going to be here Saturday and Monday. So come by here and see us. It's going to be great weather.
Yeah, and you said that employee pricing through the end of the month. So time running out on that. Folks need to get to McConnell if they want to take part. We appreciate your time this morning, Louie.
Hey, thank y'all. Have a safe weekend.
You too. That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Right. 836 FM Talk 106.5. Bringing up a lot of things here to discuss, and that's not Lizzo doing Tina Turner, so, which is a whole other story. But yeah, I'd like to hear from people. I mean, do you think they get this done? And get this done by the first, or to get this done by 2 weeks from now, or 2 months from now.
Yeah. When will it happen, if it happens? Or will, you know, we go into World War III before they get that debt ceiling raised? And Lizzo wasn't the only one who honoring Tina Turner. But
see, and I think it's a big law. I'm a Tina Turner fan. I mean, pretty awesome. Queen of rock and roll, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the Lizzo thing was something.
The Lizzo twist there.
Yeah.
How about the Alabama legislature last night, working very late? Aaron Davis with WSFA 12, so out of Montgomery, got video and audio. Now, the video is something else, but as they were taking a little bit of a break last night, here's what it sounded like in the State House. Now, I know you can't...
They're rolling on the river.
They're rolling on the river. That's the audio, but the video is something else. If you want to see your Alabama legislators doing the Tina Turner rolling on the river dance, you'll have to go to Aaron. Well, you can go to my Twitter page because I'm going to retweet this right now.
Okay. But, and you are on Twitter for the rest of the folks.
At Dalton Orwig. But you know when you have a late work night or you stay up way too late and things get a little goofy?
Uh-huh.
Well, apparently like 9 p.m. is that cutoff time for the Alabama legislature because they were acting goofy with that Tina Turner playing last night. And they were all dancing. Good stuff. Check it out on Twitter at Dalton Orwig.
I'm watching it now.
you see the dance I'm talking about? They're getting after.
Who's in the red? She's like, it's like St. Vitus's dance. And then who's that guy right there? Now there's synchronized dancing going on. This is something.
Yeah, these people who are so buttoned up normally, and the only time we hear
is
from
that
them
Gavan, in, she's right there in the middle. Yeah,
she's like the right there on center stage. Yeah. And I'm trying to figure out who the fella there in the back who was, he went all in.
Yeah, he's big time.
He's all in on the dance. But you know, they're also buttoned up when they do these interviews. Usually, I mean, some of them let loose a little bit, let you know they are normal humans like the rest of us, but
maybe not.
Yeah, it's kind of funny seeing that. Don texted in on the Ascension Technologies text line earlier regarding your question about children working in hazardous conditions. The definition of that is much different now. Don said, I don't know how much more hazardous it could be for a child than to be on a tractor at 9 years old, but by the time I was 13, I was able to drive just about anything. The majority of kids today don't seem to be able to keep their rooms clean. I certainly don't think they should be serving alcohol. And that text came in from Don. This story that I referenced earlier, this AP wrote this up. Kids could fill labor shortages, even in bars, if these lawmakers succeed. Several states who are going through their state legislative sessions, just like we are here in Alabama, they've got these bills, and I think many of them are having more trouble filling jobs than Alabama is. I mean, despite J-PAL's best efforts and the Federal Reserve of trying to, they won't say it, but they need people to lose their jobs.
That's how this works, y'all. I mean, when you raise interest rates. And you do this, you're trying to slow inflation, you raise interest rates, you try to get people to not have jobs, therefore less money in the system to bring down inflation. That's the truth of it.
They're trying to, without saying it again, tighten the noose on business owners so that they have to cut employment. Mm-hmm. And despite their best efforts, I guess the numbers that came out yesterday were showing a bit more of a rise in firings, people who have lost their jobs, more than they expected anyway. But it hasn't worked out the way that I think the Federal Reserve thought it would. So even with the low unemployment numbers, there are so many states that are having trouble filling these jobs. You've probably noticed if you've gone out to eat that they've got all these open tables and they can only serve so many people at a time. Well, lawmakers in several states are embracing legislation to let children work in more hazardous occupations for more hours on school nights and in expanded roles, including serving alcohol in bars and restaurants as young as 14. Now, you've probably been in it like I have, where you have a younger than 21 waiter or waitress, and you put your drink order in, and then you actually have to wait like an extra 10 minutes
for the 21-year-old to go get your beer.
Yeah, they have to find somebody. They say in this story, the efforts to significantly roll back labor rules are largely led by Republican lawmakers to address worker shortages and in some cases run afoul of federal regulations. Child welfare advocates, of course, they're worried about this. Quote, the consequences are potentially disastrous, according to a director of the Child Labor Coalition. You can't balance a perceived labor shortage on the backs of teen workers. At least 10 states over the past 2 years have proposed loosening child labor laws, and some bills became law, others were withdrawn or vetoed. Legislators in Wisconsin, Iowa, and Ohio are actively considering relaxing child labor laws to work on to address worker shortages. Employers have struggled to fill open positions after a spike in retirements, deaths, and illnesses from COVID-19, decreases in legal immigration, and other factors. They've got it all in here, the deaths from COVID and the decrease in legal immigration. They're saying that's the reason behind the open jobs. Job market is one of the tightest since World War II. Anyway, this kind of came up a couple weeks ago when we were discussing everybody on the text line, Dan, me, you chimed in, the jobs we worked when we were younger.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, of course, plenty of child labor laws in place when I was younger. It was, you know, 15 years ago maybe. But I worked in my parents' business very young.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I had to clean the bathrooms. That wasn't great. take hot apple pies out of the oven, hot cookies. But it's not like they were working me to the bone. I know so many of you out there had, you know, really tough jobs when you were younger. I did the, you could call it landscaping. I just call it cutting the grass and weed eating for properties at my house and around my house, like so many other kids. But it would help fill some of these roles, right? If there were more, not even down to 14, but if more 15, 16 kids who are college age, if they were out there working even part-time, but full-time jobs, we wouldn't be facing nearly this labor shortage that we are, I don't think.
Okay, so and the money's gone up in a lot of those jobs as well, but let's look at something. Not saying the economy is the same as a military, but towards the end of any failed war for the side that loses, what do you hear in history? They have younger and younger people fighting on the front line, the old and the young, right?
Mm-hmm.
Towards, I mean, pick the war, pick the side that lost. You'll see that they started conscripting people, you know, younger and younger, and 14-year-olds old, and all those things. Yes, there are always a story where somebody lied about their age and got it. But I'm saying they go younger and younger there. It is not a healthy sign that we need to open. And once again, I'm not against kids working. I'm for it. I mean, I grew up the same way you did, but it is not a sign of health of sector that you have to go younger and younger to find people, because that means people that are in the working age are not working.
Right.
I mean, there's the point. Now, not to go conspiracy theory, but is this a primer for what's coming in the next 10 to 20 years as AI starts to replace so many jobs? Maybe they're just going to let it get to unfilled jobs, and then what will step in there is technology, AI, and then you'll have this workforce participation rate that'll be super low, because those jobs won't be there for somebody to come back at a different time, and then we got to figure out what we do there. I mean, because if you don't believe in the next 20 years AI is going to replace so many jobs.
Yeah.
So many jobs.
Yeah, a lot of white collar jobs too.
Yeah,
it'll replace entry jobs and high paying white collar jobs. So not, you know, there will be people who are taken out, basically, regardless of their income level.
So I'm just wondering if this crisis continues, right? And there's, I mean, if it's bad enough, they're saying we need to get, which, by the way, if kids work in selling alcohol, like you said in that story, I think they should do this. You know how bars are higher than tables? The kid has to be able to see over the bar. And if the kid can see over the bar, if it's not just a hand pushing the Coors Light across, it's, I can actually see the kid's eyes, they're big enough. Like, you know, you must be as high as a pirate's parrot to get on this ride, something like that. But if we're that lacking for people to work these jobs, isn't it kind of a sweet spot for those pushing AI in certain, you know, and automation to come in and say, don't worry about filling those. We'll fill those this way, and those jobs aren't going to come back. I mean, it's eventually what would happen, but maybe it's expedites this happening.
Yeah, that's because it's coming. And it's coming faster than I think a lot of people even expected with this AI. Gardner says, I don't believe there are fewer workers. Look at the workforce participation numbers. Labor isn't as low as they say. They just take these people out of the workforce. Doc says, it wasn't all fun and games. Talking about the legislature. We passed an incredible... Okay, I see here. This is Representative Mark Shirey said, it wasn't all fun and games. We passed an incredible education budget and $300 million in tax relief for the people of Alabama. Yeah, I was
Representative, did you dance last night? Can we find you in the Tina Turner dance? Can you let us know and send us a link to your direct video of you dancing last
night?
That's
what I want to know. Yeah, I know you weren't dancing the whole night, but that was caught on video, and that was good stuff there. This texter says, we are the carbon the elites want to get rid of. Sean says nothing cringier than politicians dancing. Joel in Somerdale says no wonder they didn't take the tax rebate serious enough and they got us down as cheap as they could. I'm sure there was a lot of debate that went into where they settled on that number after about four or five different changes here. And then a lot of text this morning upset that I decided to play some AOC audio there going into the break.
Clutch your pearls. My gosh, but I can't hear somebody I disagree with. It makes me so angry.
This texter said, just not sure why you decided it would be fun to torture your audience this morning by playing audio clips of the painfully stupid AOC.
Because one sword sharpens another, y'all. That you gotta spar to get better.
Hey, I will say, you know, what the words that come out of her mouth may not be the brightest, but she sure sounds good. Her voice, she has a good sounding voice. Damn Yankee says, why does AOC keep getting airtime? She's the representative for a part of New York. Why do we care what she thinks? She gains power and influence every time. Blackball her from national media.
Now, she gets attention because she says those things, and there's conservatives do the same thing. I mean, you have to learn how to, you know, say the thing that gets you the, you know, gets you on TV, gets you on radio.
I thought what she had to say and what Underwood had to say was interesting because despite what the national media kind of, it looks like there's complete agreement in the Democrat Party and that everyone's in line behind Biden. There are Democrats, and they seem to be coming from the far left flanks, but they're not happy with how Biden is playing this media game with these budget negotiations. And however you look at it, I think in that messaging war between McCarthy and Biden, McCarthy has won, especially the last several weeks. He's made it clear that he's reached out to Biden for months now to start negotiating
since
on this
February
thing.
Yeah,
every time he talks with the media, he's smiling, and he looks like he's the one who has no worries when we're, you know, when Biden's negotiating and you have KJP getting up there and blaming the Republicans for everything. McCarthy seems to be taking it and moving along.
Hey, well, one last text here before we go to the news, and probably this will just be a placeholder for hopefully I'll have discussion time. I have time for this on the midday show. If not, we'll do it next week. So David, because it's Supreme Court season, David says, in addition, opinion of the Supreme Court yesterday, and in civil libertarian land, it's unanimous ruling that the government cannot keep excess profits from tax lien sales and property auctions. And David, I saw the same thing, paid attention. This is one of these things like, okay, you seize a property for unpaid taxes, but the property, say the taxes are $10,000 and the property sells for $60,000. In some states, they're keeping the entire $60,000. What the Supreme Court said is no, you keep the portion that brings them, you know, brings them current with those taxes, and the rest goes back to the owner of the property. That seems to me, not just as a libertarian, civil libertarian like David, I am, it also just seems logical and fair. And I saw in a discussion of this, of that ruling, that I guess Alito, whoever rendered the decision on it, went as far back as the Magna Carta, the founding documents from England, right?
Yeah.
That became part of what was thrown in the blender to come up with that beautiful document that gives us this republic. And back as far as Magna Carta, they said you couldn't do, if you could seize a property, pay off the debt, but the remainder went back to the citizen that had it. So I thought that was a solid decision from the Supreme Court there.
Yeah, another big one there that probably won't get as much discussion. I want to read into it more. Does that just have to do with property seizure for unpaid taxes, or when you see some of these people who are traveling with tens of thousands of dollars.
Are you trying to bait me? You're baiting me into something here? You're trying to, like, you see my eyes go red with civil asset forfeiture discussion?
Yeah.
That's for another show. Nobody wants to say that right
no
now.
No doubt. 851 FM Talk 106.5. Coming back, we'll read the rest of the text we can get to at 251-343-0106. Also, the phone lines. We'll try to get to those, too. And let you know who's coming up on the Jeff Poor Show. I know Jeff stayed up late seeing what was going on in Montgomery. We'll get to all that and more coming up on Mobile Mornings. Thank you, Kane. 855 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Jeff Poor Show on the way next. We'll have Todd Stacey on in hour number one with Alabama Daily News, recapping the late night in the Alabama legislature. Hour number two, Trustful Tribune's Scott Buttram. And looking forward to this, well, every Friday, but especially today, State Senator Chris Elliott joining Jeff, as Senator Elliott was one of the no votes in the Senate General Fund budget last night. One of three no votes. We'll get his reasoning coming up on the Jeff Poor Show around 11:30. Ukraine, I don't know if you saw this report. So that drone attack on the Kremlin, if you want to call it. I guess it did make contact with the roof there at the Kremlin, but U.S. officials have, I guess, finished their investigation, and they said it was most likely orchestrated by Ukraine. It's kind of a surprising bit of honesty. Maybe they've been honest this whole time, but it doesn't seem like it all the time, whether it was the oil line, the gas line being blown up there.
Nord Stream,
yeah. It doesn't seem like they've been very honest with every single thing that comes out of the Russia-Ukraine war, but here they're saying that was most likely an attack from Ukraine, that failed drone attack on the Kremlin. That report came out yesterday.
That's pretty gutsy. We don't have time, but I mean, you know, now with letting the F-16s or F-18s,
F-16s
go, you know, it's this moving of the line. You know, it's just, I will never do, we'll do this, but we'll never do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then next month, well, we're going to do this, but we'll never do that. And then, you know, we never do this, but we're going to do this. And they keep moving it. And part of the stick, right, if we give Ukraine these weapons, they have to promise not to use them outside of Ukraine on Russia. What is that worth? I mean, you know, are they going to, I mean, if it's the last minute and Ukraine feels like they can't win, then they're going to do it. It's only if they think they can continue and get more materiel from the U.S. that they won't do it.
And it's all about the rhetoric, right? Because you had these attacks early this week that were within the Russian borders, but on the border, and Russia made it sound like it was an absolute slaughter, but they said they killed 70 Russian separatists.
Mm-hmm.
So if Ukraine is striking within Russia's borders,
then aren't they supposed to
claim,
stop?
Yeah, if they just claim it's separatists or whatever, however they're able to phrase what's going on there, may be the difference in whether this continues to escalate or not, I guess.
I mean, it's similar as saying that they're taking money out of the ETF and using it on prisons in Alabama because it's about educating prisoners. I mean, it's a semantics game.
It's all semantics, yeah. And I guess they do want this to look like it was Ukraine because it was an assassination attempt. And while it looked like a failure, right, they did get the drones pretty dang close to where they were trying to hit. Two drones, one caused a fire, the second exploded. Russia says they blew it up over the Kremlin.
Right.
But if this was sent by Ukraine, they got pretty close to where Putin could possibly be. Maybe that's the reasoning behind saying, yeah, that was Ukraine who did it all.
I don't know.
8:58, coming up, the Jeff Poor Show next. Midday Mobile at noon. We'll see y'all again on Tuesday morning.